Friends, this news of this really tragic death of Dr. Beveridge reached here about 3 o'clock this afternoon. Some of the party of Baha'is who were with Kent in the Sinai called to explain that this accident had taken place about 10 o'clock in the morning, and that they had been working to try to revive him at the beginning, and then they had had him in a small hospital in Sharm el-Sheikh. And I'm sure the whole group was very, very saddened by such an event. He had made a dive with Axel Anders. A group of them had made a dive, and he had come out of the water apparently all right. And then shortly after, according to the report, he had a bubble of some sort that went to his brain, and he died instantly. This is about the only news that we have, really. He was out of the water. You'll want to remember Alam in your prayers, too, as he was with his father and has had to face all this event by himself. His mother is here. The House of Justice sent 2 of its members as representatives to share the news with her, take the news, have prayers with her, and she's flying down with the Ruse tonight to Eilat. And was hoped that they'd be able to have the body there. They need to have an autopsy of some sort. And from the appearance of things, we'll have the funeral and burial in Eilat within the coming days. We don't yet know how long that will take due to the various legal requirements. You know that he's been serving very faithfully in the research department. He headed the English research section, was a member of this working group of the research department. He's done a lot of scholarly work for the faith before he came to the Holy Land. He leaves a very fine record of assistance to the House of Justice. He'll be sorely missed in that department, that's for sure. And one can't always see the wisdom of these things or the accidental deaths that involve accident. But I'm sure that he will appreciate your prayers, and we should be thinking of him in these days in the floor, especially as they face the circumstances, the new circumstances of their life. Thank you for the prayers. We thought that it would be nice if we were together to have these prayers and go ahead with this class, this introductory class. I think that my feeling is that Kent would want us to do that anyway. And all of us follow like good students in his footsteps, really. He was very scholarly and studious in the faith, and that is one way that we can all be of service to the cause. We have a couple of volunteers to help pass out these notes. About the screen, but the microphone connection doesn't seem to be plugged in. It's the jack between the amplifier and the recorder, I don't know. That's all right, except now there's no amplification. I don't know where it's not clear yet. Tomorrow we should have more details.
Yes,
that's fine. Well, seems to be amplifying anyway. So what we have before us, a study of the Kitab-i Ghan, is really beyond the scope of the amount of time that we can allot to this, even if we take 2 months for it, it will be a very cursory study. In the past, we've had several courses. Every 2 years or so, we used to run a course on the Gong, this introductory type. And indeed, it was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we had a course on the Holy Gong, but that took exactly 14 months. We read everything in class and we discussed it. And there was a valiant group that lasted. But now, that's many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, there weren't so many short-term people here. And so it was possible to embark on something like that. But I think it's more practical for your purposes, for our purposes, to paint the picture in broad terms, so to speak. Now, I'm sure most of you have read the Gong or are familiar with the Gong to some degree. We hope that certain things that we have in the writings and indications from Shoghi Effendi and so on will sharpen our perception of the book and will act as an incentive for deeper study. And not only for deeper study, but for mastery of the text, which is what Shoghi Effendi calls for. Now you'll see the approach, which we'll follow not rigidly, but hopefully as it's set forth here. Each of the lessons would be one evening. Tonight to discuss something of the importance of the Gong and its study, and then to take a look at the historical background for a study of the Gong, the setting, that it, something about Shia Islam and about the maternal uncles of the Bab, and that we'll understand why we're going to study about the uncles of the Bab later on. And then there are other notes in God Passes By on this, and we need to consider some of the principles and prerequisites for understanding divine texts to help sharpen our approach to the reading of divine verses. And then the major themes of the Gong as set forth by Shoghi Effendi, this is from God Passes By, we'll discuss those in more detail and look at the passages that he has selected out of this whole book to include in the dispensation, and again those passages that he selected to include in the gleanings, which gives us some clue to the major themes and messages that are contained in this book, and he's made a selection of the whole thing. And then we'll have a review of the text, which will be about 50 pages a week. If you start reading now, you wouldn't have to read that many pages. If you want to read as we go along, or perhaps you'll finish your reading before we start even, depending on how fast you read it, obviously there's an advantage to reading slowly and carefully, but there's also a certain impression in a quick reading, or at least a consistent, steady reading of the whole book. You get an overview that you don't get otherwise if you read it over a 2 or 3 month period. So these assignments, which I would say are suggested assignments, and we all have different responsibilities here. Not all of us are able to fulfill all of these. These are not requirements for coming to the class, but I think that you'll get a lot more out of the class if you can do these things. The first one is to read the book itself, even though you may have read it before, give it a review again. Then the question of identifying the major themes set forth by Shoghi Effendi about the book. I'll talk to you a little bit about that again. I have a paper here to give you on that. You may wish to prepare your own subject outline of the text. That's a very challenging thing with the Gong. It moves back and forth from different themes. You can do a sequential outline of the text. You could do a thematic outline of the text. You may wish to order certain major topics. This list of major themes that we have from Shoghi Effendi also serves somewhat as an index and an analysis of what the subject matter of the Gong is all about. Then you may wish to note down any questions or points for clarification. When we come to these review lessons, you'll have them marked. Either mark them in the margin of your book. I don't find myself any reticence about marking books, because this helps to make the book your own in the sense that it describes what you're up to. You can look at this one afterwards. It's got all kinds of markings and cross-indexing and all kinds of other aids to help me find things when I want to find them, and to see what other passages are reflecting or bearing on the text that I'm reading. Then, in the course of reading the book, because one of the very important subjects of the book is the treatment of symbolic terms that have been the cause of confusion in the past amongst the people, if you take down, if you make a list for yourself of these symbolic terms that are interpreted or explained in the Kitab-e-Iqan, and note down their various meanings, for instance, the terms sun and moon, what are the various meanings attributed to these terms by Baha'u'llah? And finally, it would be helpful if you compile a list of supplementary reading material that we can share with each other. Shoghi Effendi has mentioned to pilgrims in the past that in reading any of these texts of Baha'u'llah, particularly he mentions it with in association with the Iqan, that if we can read other books on similar subjects by non-Baha'is, treating of same kind of subject, will help to sharpen our appreciation of what we're reading in the Iqan. For instance, there may be certain texts on Islamic philosophy which would give you background on a certain section of this book, which otherwise, when we come to it, you'll see, would be so entirely new to you, perhaps, unless you'd had some study in the East, that you would perhaps miss the point of the theme altogether. Or you wouldn't realize that Baha'u'llah was treating a certain theme in a particular manner because it was the custom of the people to view it in another way. So he very gently changes the understanding of it. And he himself has given a couple examples here of how to teach by explaining, asking the meaning of a certain verse to one of the people who was visiting, one of the seekers or friend, student who was there. And the man gives this meaning, and then Baha'u'llah says, yes, this is the understanding that the people have of this verse. Then he asks him, could it not be that another meaning, or that a meaning of this could be such and such? And then he very gently introduces another whole way of looking at a subject. And it gives us an idea how we might deal in our teaching work when someone affirms that the Bible says so and so. We can affirm that's certainly been an understanding of this particular passage or verse for centuries, and but at the same time one wonders that if it might not have this other meaning, and can bring up one of the behind meanings and explain it through. Gives us some interesting examples of how we can proceed. Out of the past courses we've built up, this is part of the course material that we'll be going through. This is in the stage, in an editing, final editing stage now. We're hoping the U.S. Publishing Trust has asked if it could publish it. So perhaps we'll have a book out sometime this year which will have all the details. But in the meanwhile, instead of copying a lot of this material, which will be changed and edited in the meantime, I think that if you take notes, or if you try to listen with the purpose of taking notes on the different subjects that interest you, it will help it to fix it in your mind. There will be a number of explanations sequentially with the text, supplementary material from other tablets, from other books of explanation, from the Baha'i glossary of the Iqan in Persian. There's a number of sources that give us some necessary background for things that sometimes cause confusion to Western readers. When Baha'u'llah was here in the Holy Land, in the house of Abud, one day one of the friends who was acting as a servant in the house came in and brought some tea to Baha'u'llah. Baha'u'llah was standing by the window reading a book, and he greeted the servant and said, "You know what book this is?" And said, "No, didn't know." Baha'u'llah said, "It's the Kitab-e-Iqan." He said, "It's a very good book. You should read it." He was looking at it himself. The Kitab-e-Iqan was originally called the Epistle to the Uncle. Does anybody know why? sure someone knows. I'm sure a lot of you know. Why was the epistle to the son of the, this epistle to the uncle? It was written for the Bob's uncle, for one of the Bob's uncles. You know about the uncle of the Bob that raised him and became his follower and protected him in Shiraz and later went on to become one of the seven martyrs of Tehran. There were two other uncles, and one of these uncles asked Baha'u'llah certain questions. When Baha'u'llah was in Baghdad, this is several years after the passing, after the martyrdom of the Bab. And Baha'u'llah discussed these subjects with him. There's some indications here of answers he gave him verbally, and then also he revealed this tablet, this book, about the same subjects that he'd spoken to him about. We'll be looking a little bit later on at the history of the original manuscript, what happened to it. Bob's uncle took it with him. It eventually found its way back to the Holy Land and is now in the archives, in the vault at the seat of the House of Justice. And this is a manuscript copy in the hand of Abdu'l-Bahá, with annotations and little few changes here and there in Baha'u'llah's own handwriting. It's a very, very precious document. Because we have it in Abdu'l-Bahá's hands with Baha'u'llah's notes, I should think it would be the most precious, one of the most precious, if not the most precious thing we have in the archives from the point of view of the writings. We have the Akdas, but we have it from dictation, we have it in the hands of the principal amanuensis, but we don't have any Akdas in Baha'u'llah's own hand. I think there is a copy though in Abdu'l-Bahá's handwriting. So this is something very, very special. Now, this book is referred to by Shoghi Effendi as the preeminent doctrinal work of Baha'u'llah. Not only unsurpassed by anything else he wrote, with the exception of the Akdas, which is a book of laws, and doesn't contain the doctrinal explanations that the Iqan contains. This is the most preeminent book that's ever been given to the human race as far as explaining God and God's ways. And it is a key to the understanding the scriptures of the past, and it contains the basic doctrines and tenets and fundamental teachings of the faith. And as such is the source of both enlightenment and confirmation for the human heart. In support of this, we have a quotation which I'd like to read in opening from the Iqan itself, page 237. Now the page number I'm going to give you is from the American edition. We can get these transfer sheets that between this and the British edition, if you should have the British copy of the Iqan, which won't be so important this evening, but we'll get copies of that. And also there's now a key between the American edition and this thicker Indian collection of the writings of Baha'u'llah, so that you can find your way back and forth. Baha'u'llah states about the Iqan, he says, in the Iqan itself, he says, all the scriptures and the mysteries thereof are condensed into this brief account. All the scriptures and the mysteries thereof are condensed into this brief account. So much so that were a person to ponder a while in his heart, he would discover from all that hath been said the mysteries of the words of God, and would apprehend the meaning of whatever hath been manifested by that ideal king. Such a promise. Page 237 of the Iqan. The materials, as I say, that we've gathered for this course have come out of and been stimulated by class study. And they've evolved with repetition of the class from time to time. There'll be new questions and new things people would want to know, and oftentimes I wouldn't know what it was and no one else would, and we'd try to find out from somewhere, and then we would add those to the notes. So the notes grew this way, and the hopefully they'll be helpful to you both as in our group study and for individual reading. No doubt there'll be whole volumes of annotations and supplementary material in the future for studying the Agon. You can imagine, after what we just read about it, how important it's going to be in the spiritual life of man. The hope of these notes and these outlines is to give us a little broader vision of its fundamental truths, and perhaps this then will be a reference point for explanations that will be easier, more readily at hand through this, through these kinds of notes than you would be able to find normally in your libraries and so on. One of the things that the Agon does is it speaks for itself. It's its own great expounder. And though we have these notes of various sorts, ultimately the divine verses illumine each other and the student of the verses. So the more that you compare and bring to bear other verses and other sections from Baha'u'llah's writings and other sections of the Agon against other parts of the Agon, I think the more understanding that one gains of its meanings, its implications. It has the capacity to guide us towards the heights of certitude and what Baha'u'llah calls in the Agon positive knowledge. Shoghi Effendi in God Passes By has characterized the Agon as a unique repository of inestimable treasures. And as we stated, he says that it occupies a position of unsurpassed preeminence among the doctrinal writings of the author of the Baha'i Dispensation. He also makes a commentary at the same time. He talks about the repository of the ethical teachings of the faith. These are the doctrinal teachings in the Agon. In what book do we find the ethical? What is the preeminent ethical work of Baha'u'llah? Does anyone know? The Hidden Words. Now, oftentimes we think of them as being mystical. Shoghi Effendi characterizes them as ethical. They affect the actions of men and the outlook that man has in his relationship with God and with each other. And then he, at the same time, speaks about the greatest mystical composition, and that is the Seven Valleys. And he says that these are these three immortal works, the Agon, the Hidden Words, and the Seven Valleys. These constitute the first fruits of Baha'u'llah's revelation. They were all revealed in Baghdad, and they were all revealed before his declaration. So one should bear that in mind in reading the text of the Agon, that Baha'u'llah is here speaking. He has the revelation within him because he received the birth of the revelation in 1852. But then he's revealing this before 1863, before his declaration to his intimate disciples. And so he alludes sometimes very, very strongly to his position or to the coming appearance of the divine light. Now I wanted to cite to you, for you here, a few letters from Shoghi Effendi, which all together give us a very clear picture of the importance that he placed on the study of the Agon, careful study of the Agon. I think you'll see as we read them how it heightens our interest and quickens our incentive, our initiative that we want to take to become true students of the Agon. And most of these have now been included in the compilation on the importance of deepening. The first one is in from the 11th of March 1923, and these are all written through the Guardian Secretary. He says, "The sacred books are full of allusions to this new dispensation. In the Book of Agon, Baha'u'llah gives the keynote and explains some of the outstanding passages, hoping that the friends will continue to study the sacred books by themselves and unfold the mysteries found therein. In 1930, 14th of June 1930, he says, the Agan is the most important book written on the spiritual significance of the cause. 28th of June 1930, he says, the Agan is the most important book wherein Baha'u'llah explains the basic beliefs of the faith. 1931, you should form study classes and read the important books that have been published, especially the Agan, which contains the basic tenets of the faith. The one who ponders over that book and grasps its full significance will obtain a clear insight into the scriptures and appreciate the true mission of the Bab and Baha'u'llah. Then again, on the 9th of February, 1932, Shoghi Effendi hopes that you will exert all your effort to deepen your knowledge of the literature of the movement until you become fully acquainted with its spirit and tenets. Unless you do obtain such a firm hold, you will never be able to teach others and render real service to the promulgation of the faith. Of special importance is the Book of the Agan, which explains the attitude of the cause towards the prophets of God and their mission in the history of society. Besides this, there is some answered questions of the Master and Dawnbreakers of Nabil. Every Baha'i should master these books and be able to explain their contents to others. Besides their importance, they are interesting and most absorbing. Could have been very dull but been important. But he says, no, they're also interesting and absorbing in themselves. Ninth of June 1932, again writing to an individual believer, he says he fully approves the idea of holding study classes, for the deeper the friends go in their understanding of the teachings, the more firm and steadfast they will become, and the more unwavering in their support of the institutions of the faith. Books such as the Agan, Some Answered Questions, and the Dawnbreakers should be mastered by every Baha'i. They should read these books over and over again. The first two books will reveal to them the significance of this divine revelation, as well as the unity of all the prophets of old. I remember hearing one of the pilgrims came back in the days of the Guardian and said that not in her pilgrim group, but in the group before, there had been a man who was there, one of the pilgrims, and Shoghi Effendi had asked if they had read the Agan. And this man had said, yes, he'd done it. And Shoghi Effendi tickled him, and afterwards he was telling the pilgrims, you know, there was one of the believers was here who said that he'd done the Agan. He says, friends, we can never do the Agan. It's not like the Americans tour Europe and do it. You know, he was talking about this, how we do things. I think we've done them, but the Agan is not that. He said, friends need to read it over and over, constantly refer to it. In a postscript in his own hand, 25th of August 1932, he says that the Agan, referring to the Agan, it is the most fundamental book on the Baha'i Revelation. And in the 7th of May 1933, he is very eager to have this wonderful book translated well, for it is the best means of grounding those who become interested in the fundamental teachings of the faith. The Agan and Dr. Esselman's book, which would be the New Era, will be sufficient to make any seeker a true believer in the divine nature of the faith. Those two books. The Agan is essential. Now, he was writing, in this case, he was writing to Leonora Armstrong in South America. Leonora Halsapple in those days was the first pioneer to go to South America, to settle in South America. And Ria Khanum, who had known her from those days and had met her because of her mother, Ria Khanum's mother, was encouraging, very encouraging and stimulating to young Leonora. Leonora was about, I think she was 20, 21 maybe, when she first went out pioneering. And she sailed off alone to South America with very little money in her purse and one address that she had of someone in Brazil who was vaguely interested in the faith. She had been a very good student and had a college education and had studied Latin, so she was prepared really to learn Spanish and Portuguese, which she went on to do, of course. And she used to sustain herself by teaching English to the children of wealthy people and others who were interested. And then gradually she perfected her use of the language over the next 10 years, and then she translated the New Era into Portuguese and into Spanish as well, and had help with, she even got in permission of the Catholic hospice for nuns to help with the review of the text. And the Mother Superior granted this, but she said that the nuns that would assist mustn't see all the pages in succession. They could only see one. This one could see one page, and this one could see another, and they would review it this way. So she had this review process. But she did the Agon with them this way too. And Shoghi Effendi had said, after the New Era, the most important book to translate for the teaching work was the Kitab-i Agon. Now, I think we don't think of it that way. We think of the Agon as a book you study after you're a Baha'i, so to speak, rather than being an introductory book. But we should remember that it is originally written for a non-Baha'i, for a non-believer. And that was the uncle of the Bab. So maybe we need to revise the way we think about it. Maybe we need to realize that it is those elements from the Agon and the parallel points that you find in some answered questions where many of the themes of the Agon are further elaborated by the Master, that we can find those truths which will enable us to be effective teachers of the cause. Again, in a letter of the 1st of October, 1933, written again on this time on behalf of the Guardian, says, "The Book of Certitude by Baha'u'llah contains the very essence of the teachings. And because of its clarity and its relative simplicity, can greatly appeal to every thoughtful reader. The Agon deepens the knowledge of the reader by acquainting him with some of the basic theological problems of the faith. It is therefore indispensable for every student of the movement." And finally, the 7th of August, 1934, he says, "He was particularly gratified to learn of your intention to make a thorough study of the Kitab-i Agon during this summer. The friends, and particularly those who wish to become competent and useful teachers, should indeed consider it to be their first duty to acquaint themselves as thoroughly as they can with each and every detail contained in this holy book, so that they may be able to present the message in a befitting manner." I didn't say anything about a brilliant manner, just a befitting manner. If we know each and every detail, then we'll at least be adequate for a befitting presentation. He goes on to say, "It's the Guardian's hope, therefore, that those among the believers, you and me, who have thus far, and for some reason or another, failed to make a serious study of this important work, will be stimulated to do so, and will, as a result, deepen their comprehension of the essentials of the faith." 7th August, 1934. Now that's a bit of a selection of, you get the idea of the theme of it. Now, how many of you knew that that was the station of the Agon in the range of Baha'i literature? Were you familiar with it? How important it was? Some people nodding. How many of you have made a thorough study of the Agon? So I don't waste my time here. Thank you. We need you anyway to make the coffee. It's all right, Eamon. Eamon was here for the 14-month marathon course. You can ask him. You can refer to him. References. All right. Now, if I could have a couple, either the same or other volunteers, pass these out. Well, you better give me one. I don't know what's going on. That one? Yes. Yes. Okay. We try to arrange so that people that come another time will have, will be able to get copies of the materials. But please don't take extra copies for friends now while you're in the class till we see that there's enough for those here present. Now, you'll recall that when I read out the suggested assignments, one of them is to review the text identifying page references, page number references, for the major themes set forth by Shoghi Effendi. And that's the purpose of this sheet, is to provide you a place to do that. Now, I always find that in studying anything, if you're looking for something, rather than just reading it, you tend to focus better on what you're looking at, what you're reviewing. So, and some of you who have been in courses before or may have seen the notes of the previous courses will have a list of these with all the page numbers where you find these themes in the book. Please don't copy it for anybody at this stage. Let us all, and if you have it yourself, hide it away and start over again. Because this will provide you a very interesting project. Like spiritual sleuths, you will be studying and seeing, where is this now? What is I've read the whole book and I can't find it. So you have to read the whole book again to find that one line. Where is the reference to this thing? And if you do that, you will be watching and you will find the sources of all of these. Some of them are in a number of places. Some of them are only in one place. So we'll read this forward. This is a kind of an overview. The numbering and the letters that are there, of course, have been added. And Shoghi Effendi, you know, in God Passes By is written, it's all as one sentence, separated by semicolons. So in the Igan, Baha'u'llah proclaims unequivocally the existence and oneness of a personal God, unknowable, inaccessible, the source of all revelation, eternal, omniscient, omnipresent, Almighty. Now, two things always strike me from this passage. One is that here is a definition of what we believe about God, what Baha'is believe about God. We've got seven qualifications there. We believe God is unknowable, we believe He's inaccessible, He's the source of all revelation, He's eternal, He's omniscient, He's omnipresent, and He's almighty. That already gives you a fair idea of what the Baha'is believe about God. You can use this in your teaching work. Well, Baha'is, do you believe in God? Yes. Well, what do you believe about God? Well, we believe that He sends the prophets. I'm sorry. That's one of them, source of all revelation. But these keep them, store them in memory, and use them. Then you can elaborate on each one. What do we believe about the unknowability of God? That's one point that strikes you. The second one, or perhaps the first one because it comes before that, is that we believe in the oneness, existence and oneness. First of all, God exists. Second of all, He's one. And third of all, He's a personal God. What do we... Do we believe in a personal God? Does we believe in a personal God? What do we mean by a personal... What are the implications of this? Anybody have any thoughts on that? That He's involved with each individual? This is, I think that's a good key. The word impersonal is a very good key. It's impersonal in the sense that He doesn't care, or He's not conscious. He's a force that operates according to fixed laws, and that's it. You know, you either follow the laws or you're in trouble. Please.
No, I would say that also leave one to believe that He doesn't stand out from the judgment and punishment or reward to a lot, you know, everyone. He takes everyone into account.
And maybe all of us are deserving of certain things. Then we presume that if we all get it at one time, that probably all of us were individually deserving of that. But in general, this is true. This is again, there is a personal judgment of each of us and of our actions and our character. And one is judged according to one's gifts, also stated clearly in one of the letters of the Guardian, so that the justice of God is not the same for everyone, because there's different capacities in each of us. If we have a great capacity and we haven't used it for anything worthwhile, we'll be in one state. And if we have very little capacity but we used all of it and begged for more, we'll probably be in another condition. Personal God, a God that is conscious of his creation. It's not unconscious, He's conscious of His creation. He doesn't have less powers than we do, He has more. And basically, His attributes, as far as we mean get into the tablets, it says that the attributes of God, qualities and attributes of God, the essential qualities and attributes of God are the same as His essence, and we don't know anything about them. But we derive these by a certain negative process that we say, well, we are very weak, so God must be very powerful. We are very ignorant, so He must be very wise. And it's from that basis that we begin evolving these things. But also, He has basic attributes that are knowable through the manifestations of God. And this is something that He has set in motion for us, that this divine center of illumination, the sun, what we call the Sun of Truth, radiates divine qualities and names, spiritual forces, by which we are created and sustained. One of the amazing statements in the Yigan is that all things live and move and have their being through the manifestations of God. They're not just another person like you and me. We all know that, of course, but we tend to think of them as a historical figure. But there is this aspect which we'll be studying more about. One of the aspects of the twofold character of the manifestations, which is this all-encompassing universal reality which belongs to all of them and with which they are identified. The Bab says very clearly, all of these holy prophets of God manifest the divine will, or they are the primal will amongst men. All things live, move, and have their being within the manifestation of God. Can you quote it? Do you know?
No, but I'll be
glad to. Good. Second, he asserts the relativity of religious truth and the continuity of divine revelation. In other words, the truth that God gives us, we'll see and hear from age to age, is in accordance with our capacity and receptivity, not in accordance with his knowledge and understanding. The continuity of divine revelation, this is a concept that already had been introduced in the Quran, at least the successive character of revelation. But here the continuity of divine revelation, the fact that it is progressively greater each time, each prophet bringing in a further outpouring of divine truth than those that had been commissioned to. Versality of their message, the identity of their fundamental teaching, sanctity of their scriptures, the twofold character of their stations. This is one of the major themes of the account. He denounces the blindness and perversity of the divines and doctors of every age, cites and elucidates the allegorical passages of the New Testament, the abstruse verses of the Quran. You'll find an explanation that there are two kinds of verses in Scripture in the Quran, and the cryptic Mohammedan traditions, the hadith, which have bred those age-long misunderstandings, doubts, and animosities that have sundered and kept apart the followers of the world's leading religious systems. He enumerates the essential prerequisites for the attainment by every true seeker of the object of his quest. And though we all know this passage related to the true seeker, that he who chooses to tread the path of search leading unto the Ancient of Days and all of the prerequisites that are given there, there's several other places in the book where he has smaller references to this, so you won't want to be satisfied with just one. Demonstrates the validity, the sublimity, and significance of the Bab's revelation. The Guardian in God Passes By refers, he's speaking about the Kitab-i-Badi that Baha'u'llah revealed later on, and he said there's a parallel between these two books, that the Yugan is Baha'u'llah's defense of the Babi revelation, and the Kitab-i-Badi is Baha'u'llah's defense of the Baha'i revelation, of his own revelation. So we learn from that short reference that this is book has been written in defense of the Babi revelation. 8 acclaims the heroism and detachment of his disciples, of the Bab's disciples. 9 foreshadows and prophesies the worldwide triumph of the revelation promised to the people of the Bayan. In other words, the Baha'i revelation. 10 upholds the purity and innocence of the Virgin Mary. It's a very interesting theme. There are a number of letters of the Guardian about this too to help us understand what this is about. Glorifies the Imams of the faith of Muhammad. 12 imams, the 12 princely successors of Muhammad that are recognized by Shia Islam, 12er Islam. 12 celebrates the martyrdom and lauds the spiritual sovereignty of the Imam Hussein. Particularly significant because that Baha'u'llah identifies himself spiritually as the return of the Imam Hussein, who was a lesser figure as far as one would understand from history, and the supreme manifestation of God says that he is the return of this third imam, along with all of the other things that he says. 13 upholds the meaning of such symbolic terms as return, resurrection, seal of the prophets, and day of judgment. 14 adumbrates and distinguishes between the three stages of divine revelation. and 15 expatiates in glorious terms upon the glories and wonders of the city of God, renewed at fixed intervals by the dispensation of Providence for the guidance, the benefit, and salvation of all mankind. And of course he explains there that the city of God is the Word of God that comes through the manifestations of God. So in your readings, if you find these themes and you want, you'll note the page numbers, then we'll have a comparison later on to see which ones you have found. If you found some more that the previous courses haven't found, we'll share these numbers, and then you can proceed to look those up and see how they relate to the themes, and if you agree with them as being the significant references to these major themes of the Ekon. In closing tonight, we'll just read a passage from the Ekon itself related to this last point. I won't tell you the page number because that would... When the channel of the human soul is cleansed of all worldly and impeding attachments, it will unfailingly perceive the breath of the Beloved across immeasurable distances, and will, led by its perfume, attain and enter the city of certitude. Therein he will discern the wonders of his ancient wisdom, and will perceive all the hidden teachings from the rustling leaves of the tree that flourisheth in that city. With both his inner and outer ear he will hear from its dust the hymns of glory and praise, ascending under the Lord of Lords, and with his inner eye will he discover the mysteries of return and revival. How unspeakably glorious are the signs, the tokens, the revelations and splendors which he who is the King of names and attributes hath destined for that city. The attainment unto this city quencheth thirst without water, and kindleth the love of God without fire. Within every blade of grass are enshrined the mysteries of an inscrutable wisdom, and upon every rose bush a myriad nightingales pour out in blissful rapture their melody. Its wondrous tulips unfold the mystery of the undying fire in the burning bush, and its sweet savors of holiness breathe the perfume of the messianic spirit. It bestoweth wealth without gold, and conferreth immortality without death. In each one of its leaves ineffable delights are treasured, and within every chamber unnumbered mysteries lie hidden. Then he adds, they that valiantly labor in quest of God will, when once they have renounced all else but him, be so attached and wedded unto that city that a moment's separation from it would to them be unthinkable. They will hearken unto the infallible proofs from the hyacinth of that assembly, and will receive the surest testimonies from the beauty of its rose and the melody of its nightingale. Once in about 1,000 years shall this city be renewed and readorned. So next week we'll take up something of the historical setting, the background of how the Ekon was revealed and circumstances surrounding Baha'u'llah at the time it was revealed. Thank you.